Welcome to the ABM Conversations Podcast, the number one podcast for B2B marketers wanting to explore timeless account-based marketing strategies to drive revenue, customer engagement, retention, and everything that makes sense to both marketers and sales folks. No more fluff. No more vanity metrics. Live from India, made for the world. And now your hosts, Yog and Manish.
Welcome to yet another episode of the ABM Conversations podcast. This is me, your host, Yagneshwaran Ganesh.
And this is Manish Nepal.
All right. So today we have Max Altshuler joining us all the way from Seattle. Max founded Sales Hacker, which is without a doubt the world's largest community for B2B sales professionals. It was acquired in 2018 by Outreach, one of the leading sales engagement and automation platforms. And since then, Max has been their VP of marketing. So Max, welcome to the show. And how are you doing today?
Doing all right. Thanks for having me.
All right. It's our pleasure. So Max, you obviously, you know, you have a very interesting background of engineering B2B sales, which is going to be very valuable for our listeners of the show today. So before we get deep into the meaty part of the podcast, can you give us a little bit of your background, you know, talk us through about your journey?
Yeah, definitely. So graduated college, had no idea what the heck I was going to do. And that was back in like 2010. And was kind of out on my own trying to figure it out, and ended up finding a company called Udemy, which is an online education marketplace. They were a couple employees in the US and a couple employees in Ankara, Turkey at the time, and had just raised a seed round of funding, and they were looking for their first sales hire. And I had done some kind of at least entrepreneurial trying to start a startup, you know, kind of failing left and right in college, but I had the hustle that they needed, and they were very scrappy and they couldn't afford, you know, maybe somebody with years of experience. So we took a chance on each other and went in there and took them through their seed and A and B rounds of funding, and grew that business from the, you know, five we had in San Francisco to 55 employees in my time there. But while I was there, I was the first sales hire. I had to figure out how to build the supply side of their marketplace. And we didn't have the resources that these bigger companies had. And I had to figure out how to generate more revenue using less resources. So we called it Hacking Sales, which is the title of my first book. And basically deconstructed the sales process and figured out, okay, what could we automate? What could we outsource? And so we outsourced our sales development reps to the Philippines. In the early days there, we were one of the kind of earliest adopters of early sales engagement with a company called TouTapp that no longer exists. But at the time really helped us scale our kind of email automation and A/B testing, and built an incredible process. And that kind of put my name, you know, out there. We had other founders and VCs that kept asking our founders, you know, how are you doing so well? How are you scaling, you know, your marketplace on the supply side, on the sales side? And they'd point them to me. And so we started a monthly meetup called the Sales Hacker Meetup. It was kind of private, invite only, bring people who kind of added value or doing some really interesting things and could add to the conversation. And that grew from 4 to 20 people over the course of a year, kind of small intentionally. And then when I left my job, I started our first Sales Hacker conference, which ended up being a 300 person conference in San Francisco. Again, tried to start small. Wasn't intentional to get too big. I tried to start with 100 people, kind of invite only. Next thing you knew, it was 300, and it kind of grew from there. So it's been a wild ride. Sales Hacker grew to meetups in 32 cities globally, across 5 different continents. We had conferences in London, San Francisco, New York. We have a publication that at the time of acquisition in 2018 had 80,000 subscribers. It now has 170,000 subscribers. And sold the company to Outreach in 2018, as mentioned, and now run marketing at Outreach, which is the leading sales engagement platform. So I got to kind of see everything come full circle. We were one of the power users of the earliest sales engagement platform, where you know, we kind of built a lot of the best practices and educated the market on how to do a lot of these things. And then, you know, here I am now working at the company that's kind of leading the way in that area. So it's been fun.
Right. That's amazing. And in between, I guess you also lecture at the University of Washington in Seattle.
Yeah. I mean, that for me is more of an extracurricular thing. I lived in Seattle for 2 years, and one of our advisors of outreach was the former CMO of Tableau, and she took them from zero to $1.2 billion in revenue, not just valuation, revenue. And she teaches the marketing program over there at University of Washington. So I'm able to guest lecture for her, and then I'm her counterpart in sales at Tableau, Kelly Wright. So it's Elisa Fink and Kelly Wright. You know, they have me in there to talk to the classes, which has been a blast.
Right. And Max, you know, you have spoken about how Sales Hacker came into being in like many forums. And we also have been fascinated by the entire story. But what we have not heard you talk about often is that I believe, you know, I speak for others as well when I say this. How did you grow the company in the initial years? Like, you know, can you tell us a little bit about how you monetized Sales Hacker during the initial months or years? And what were the challenges that you typically faced to grow the community?
Yeah, I mean, for a media company, it's a bit of a seesaw. So you grow one side and it allows you to grow the other side. So you have your audience and then you have your sponsors, in our case, which is, you know, for us, we had to go out and build the audience first. Once we had enough of an audience and you know, thought leadership and people kind of, you know, looked at us as a credible resource, then it was like, all right, well, you know, maybe we should get involved with these guys, piggyback on their success and use them to promote our product. So, you know, we had our first 5,000 subscribers or so. We were doing the conferences. We'd get 300 people at a conference. We were able to get the conferences sponsored because we had 300, you know, potential buyers there. We made money off that. Once the conferences were successful, that's when we went to the meetups. The meetups would have 150 people, 100 to 150 people at them. And it's, you know, those were conferences were a full day, whereas the meetups were like 3 hours. But we were still able to get a pretty good audience. And then, you know, sponsors wanted to pay to get in front of that audience. So we realized we could do the same thing, you know, digitally as well, which over time, you know, we went to do webinars, our podcast, and things like that. And we're able to sell those sponsorships. And then, you know, as luck would have it, I don't know if it's, you know, sometimes it's better to be lucky than good. And I'm not really sure if I was good or if I was lucky, but I definitely say luck played a hand in it. But as we, you know, continued on through the years, sales technology just got more and more investment. And so there were more and more companies that could potentially sponsor. And at the same time, there were more and more people who were hired for sales jobs, and more companies that were looking to layer up their sales tech stacks. So it all kind of was one of those things like timing, you know, really just hit everything at the right time. We kind of rode a wave just as much as everybody else did. And so I think, you know, you have to hit the right thing at the right time. And that's part of it, always going to be part of it. But the other thing is understanding, you know, the dynamic between your audience and your sponsors and people who will pay to access the folks that will basically buy their product.
Yeah. And just to confirm, you started Sales Hacker as a community and meetups first and turned it into a publication, or was it the other way around?
It's funny enough, and I don't get asked that question much, but the background's kind of kooky because I was blogging at a website. I'm not even sure if it actually, I think it just links to like my personal website, but I think it was Max Talks Hacks was a site where I was posting articles on some of the like sales hacking stuff that I was doing. And then I started the conference, and then I started saleshacker.com after the conference, the first conference, the first and second conference ran. Yeah, I think the timeline was September of 2013 was the first conference. The blog started March of 2014, and then the New York conference was April of 2014. So, yeah, it's kind of funny that that, you know, we kind of realized that there was something missing.
Right. That's a very catchy name for a website. Unfortunately, I think that website has been down for a while.
Max Talk Tax. Yeah, I just looked it up, and it's not showing anything. It's just owned by GoDaddy. But yeah, at one point in time, that was where it was all at.
Max, I understand that you went to college to study architecture or some kind of interdisciplinary studies. Whatever it was, it wasn't sales. And based on what you just said about creating a global sales community without having much sales training in you, it's very inspiring to know that know what real life experience can teach you about entrepreneurship or sales that colleges can't do, right? And this topic of people turning to sales as a domain and mastering the domain based on some life changing event keeps cropping up repeatedly in our podcast time and again. So what I want to ask you next is, what do you think is the deal here? Why do you think colleges or other conventional institutions suck at teaching sales, and how can or how should we fix it?
Yeah, I mean, sales is really, you know, there are certain things about sales that are easy to teach. There are things you could read in books. There are things you can go to actual college programs. One of the better ones is UTD, University of Texas, Dallas, taught by Dr. Dover. They got a really good program down there. There's more of it happening now than ever before, which is awesome. But I think a huge part of sales is just being thrown into the fire. Like, you actually have to do it. And it's like few other professions in that regard, where to get started, you really just have to do it. You have to, it's such an emotional role. And it's a roller coaster at that. Nothing can prepare you for the rejection, that you're going to feel, you know, being a salesperson. So I do think that it's really tough to teach in general. The great thing about sales, it's a completely level playing field. Anybody can be in sales. You don't need a fancy degree, family, like, you know, money, a network or anything like that, you know, connections. Anybody can break into sales and be successful, and you're paid based on, you know, your output or your, you know, the output, and the outcomes from that output, which is, you know, how hard you work and, you know, how many deals you close. So it's this ultimate, you know, level playing field. That's pretty awesome. And that's a pro. I think the con is that, you know, maybe there's less focus or less resources or less education around that than there would be on, other areas where people do pay a lot of money for education. And maybe the system is broken on purpose, where they want people who make a lot of money to pay a lot of money to make a lot of money. Right. So I don't know. I've been questioning that myself for a very long time. And I'd like to think that, like, Sales Hacker has been a great place for anybody at any skill level, whether it's a continuing learner that's already at the top of their game or somebody completely brand new to sales, to come and learn for free. But I do think you kind of just have to get in. You know, it's kind of like take any seat you can, get in and learn how it's done, and really learn how to control the emotions of sales. And then, you know, the learnings and stuff like that are actually secondary. Sales is a hard job.
Yeah, I can't agree more, in the sense, like, you know, I've pretty much been on the streets ever since my internship, and, you know, I learned most of the things the hard way. So I can't agree more with what you're saying. But when I look at your career graph, Max, you know, it's clear that you were not only good at sales, but you were also a very avid community builder. In the sense, like, when you look at building a community, it's more about honing your networking skills than anything else, right? So, I mean, you literally began growing the Sales Hacker platform with in-person meetups and started charging money for it, which was, like, you know, new at that period of time. You even mentioned, like, there were very specific set of people who were willing to pay for that. And you've done all kind of events, including Saster, with people like Jason Lemkin. So based on your experience, like, how would you rank the importance of networking if I give you on a scale of 1 to 10?
Oh, man. I mean, it's extremely important. And it depends how you define networking. Like, if you define networking as, like, going to an event and just, like, meeting people, then it's not that important. But
networking is more than that. Networking is really like, it's becoming somebody who listens and provides value. And that's what people want. Like, you know, when you're in Sales Hacker, in some ways we're like a therapist. We're like, we sit down and we listen to like the community's problems. Like, what is affecting salespeople right now? And how do we help them solve those problems? So a lot of it is listening and understanding our audience and then like giving them what, not what they want to hear, but what they want to, you know, information around how to solve their problems. So, you know, it's not, it's funny, people hear networking and they think, oh, like I got to go to meetups. I got to get out there, go to events and all this stuff. And it's like, you know, no, that's not what networking is. Like networking is listening, and then it's doubling down and sharing that information. And you know, there's the old Gary Vaynerchuk saying where it's like, I think he had a book that was called like, jab, jab, right hook or something like that. It's like, it's all about provide value, then you can make an ask. And when you're growing, you know, a community, you really don't make a lot of asks. You're just providing value, providing value, providing value. I mean, for the last 8 years, you know, since I started Sales Hacker, I've been largely providing value for a lot of people and making very little asks in return. And, you know, sometimes an ask could be considered like, oh, you got to pay to come to an event. Yeah, you got to buy a ticket. But for the most part, most of the education we've surfaced is free. So we've just been really good at providing a lot of value for free. And I don't think the free part is an area that, I don't think that's why, but I do think that allows us to hit a lot of people, get access to everyone, versus a few of these other communities that you're seeing now, which are very good, but very exclusive and paid. So it's a little bit of a different kind of setup than what we had.
Right. Totally makes sense. You know, in fact, I've like off late seeing, or I've been also very much believing the fact that good sales is more about listening more. Like I've always believed that if I carry a sales deck, you know, it does not make a lot of sense. But if I spend more time listening to people, then it actually acts as an impact. But on the other hand, you know, when you look at CMOs and CEOs and founders around the world, they tend to hang out in some sort of communities and there's a lot of exchange going on. So it's a different kind of a networking. It's not about meeting and selling to each other, but it's also about hanging together and learning from each other. So how will you look at that, you know, from a sales hacker's perspective or from outreach's perspective? Like, how do you look at that bonding, you know, because some exchange has to go on. And today, right now, when you look at the entire market, like more and more communities are popping up everywhere, isn't it?
Yeah, I mean, it's great. I don't think there's a such thing as like community. Maybe there will be community saturation, but people will self-select in that case and it'll settle. So I think, I definitely think we're entering an era right now where people want to feel like they're part of something. And you used to feel like you were part of something when you went into an office and you were part of a company and everybody worked out of the same, you know, location. And now that's gone. So communities are expanding at even more rapid pace because these people want somewhere to meet up. They need to feel like they're part of something while their offices are closed from COVID or whatever's happening. Even when this bounces back and open offices reopen, I think you'll still probably see people go into their side communities. And I think the other thing about community that's really interesting is that, you know, it's a group of people that have your back. It's a great feeling to have. And people professionally want a group of people that have their back that isn't their company. Because your company is not your family. Like, you're going to leave your company one day, or your company could fire you at any minute. And you're going to have disagreements with your company that are like, oh, if we don't solve this disagreement, then we're not going to be together anymore. And I think there are definitely issues with that when it comes to like your company being your only place to rely on having your back and being that place to like, oh, I can, like, who do you go to when it comes time for you to negotiate a raise? You can't go to somebody in your company to have that conversation, you know, or who do you go to when you get – a job offer or job opportunity for your dream job, but you're happy with your current employer right now. You can't go to your company for that. So I think there are these peer networks that are popping up right now that people are really, it's really resonating because they haven't had this support group that they felt they needed in their professional, careers or lives that is now somewhat available to them. So I think it's really cool to have.
Max, you have recently transitioned from your core area of expertise, which is sales, to now being the VP of marketing at Outreach. So I have a couple of questions about that. The first one is, how hard are you finding the transition from sales to marketing?
Oh, it's all the same stuff. It's really not that different. It's just a different part of the funnel. And in some areas you're listening, in some areas you're talking. But it's all, I'd say, one funnel, and it's all even further somewhat cyclical. So, in a sales role, you're kind of listening to the front lines, providing what you hear back to marketing, and always refining and sharpening your sword. And in a marketing role, it's a lot of the same, except your front lines are your salespeople. And you want to be able to go back to them with the things that they need to be successful. And then it's the same thing, in marketing, working with your current customers, like in sales, depending on what your sales role looks like and if you're full cycle or an SDR or a CSM or an AE, but, it might look different depending on, who you service. But, once you close a deal, you're not done. You still manage that relationship. You still manage the expectations that you set, previously. A good sales rep does, at least. And with full cycle reps or reps in some cases, they still manage the account from a revenue perspective and sales perspective. And in marketing, you have customer lifecycle marketing, you have net new, and then you have customer marketing. So there's both sides of the coin that you need to pay attention to, and one feeds the other. And you can find ways to make, little flywheels in everything that you do so that you can optimize the process and get your revenue teams what they need to be successful. So it's just a slightly different problem to solve, but it's got a lot of the same attributes. And it's fascinating and interesting. You've got more budget as a marketer and more resources, yet as a sales rep, I almost feel in more control of my destiny than I do as a marketer, because marketing is so collaborative, whereas in some ways you've got a smaller group of collaboration possibly, and you're kind of the CEO of your own territory as a rep. So there are definitely fun nuances to each, but I don't know. It's fun. There's definitely a lot of creativity that goes into marketing that I love leveraging that kind of side of my brain on recently.
I agree. That was very beautifully put, because I think sales and marketing both are means to the same end, except for the nuances of how to get there. But the reason I asked you that, and you might be the best person for us to ask this question, because you have now worked on both sides of the aisle, of the sales and marketing aisle, and now you have a vantage point of looking at both functions from a higher level. So the next question I wanted to ask you is, what's the usual point of contention that you see between sales and marketing teams, and how do you think can these teams fix those areas?
Oh man, usual point of contention. I think obviously it all starts with good communication and setting kind of expectations right off the bat. I think sales typically wants more guidance from marketing about, what's coming from product, what are customers saying, how do I use this collateral, what can I do to leverage, these assets that we have. And marketing is typically focused on creating more and driving the adoption of what's out there. And I think it's communication, it's expectation setting, it's having the right people in place in your organization. And then it depends. Like if you're a brand new company, maybe there's not as much stuff that you can do on customer marketing, but there's still some that you could do. If you're a later stage company and you're selling enterprise, then maybe you want to double down on customer marketing. but it depends on like the resources that you have to get everything done. I think the toughest part of a marketer's job is getting the feedback from sales around, oh, we need this, we need that, and not having it prioritized, not having the expectations set the right way and the communication flow happening the right way. And if you've got reps that are just talking to your junior marketers about what they need, you're kind of setting yourself up for failure or worse. And so it really has to be an executive level conversation and expectation. And you know, you can say SLA, service level agreement between the two organizations to make sure that kind of they're communicating the way they need to communicate with each other, and that there's a prioritization and a list of receivables and a deadline for those things. And that, you know, that work is happening.
Right. There is something interesting that you said, Max, you know, which I really loved. You said that somewhere when you look at it, it feels like marketing has a little more budget compared to sales. But it's not only budget, right? Sometimes it's also about marketing having more tools at their access. Whereas when you look at sales, there are very little technology available compared to how much marketing has. So was that one of the motivations behind, you know, why Outreach was started, or, you know, your motivation with respect to Sales Hacker and all?
Yeah, I mean, I do think things are cyclical in a way where, you know, marketing had the rise of marketing automation maybe 10 years ago or something like that. And you saw a bunch of big $100 million to $1 billion acquisitions happen between Responsys, Marketo, HubSpot, you know, Eloqua, Exact Target, you name it. And sales never really had that. They had, you know, Salesforce started, you know, in the early 2000s, but that was about it. And so sales is due for their day. I think marketing is still getting a lot of funding, and people are very focused on top of the funnel and driving new business. And, you know, marketing spend is higher, yes, but a lot of that spend is not considering rep headcount, but is considering paid program costs like ads and things like that. I think if you factor it all in and you said, okay, sales spend versus marketing spend, but we're going to count rep headcount, then sales would have more money. So when it comes to the tech stack, I mean, marketing just decides to spend more of their money on technology than sales does. And that's a decision that an organization makes, whether they know it or not, or like it or not. That's how it should be broken out. The spend you spend on sales and marketing and how you set that up is your spend. It's not separate to your sales and marketing tech stack spend. So marketing just, you know, they need less headcount. They do need more levels of automation. They do need more levers of, you know, data and intent and increasing surface area to drive inbound. So there's money that they have to spend on that. So the headcount they need is less, but the tech and the services and things like that, they need it a lot higher.
Right. That makes more sense. Now let me, you know, go back to that part where we discussed about communities, and you know, I wanted to dig that a little bit further. In sense, like, I live in Chennai, a city that's of the size of Chicago approximately. And it is home to some of the most active SaaS communities in India. Or you know, you can even say in the Asia level by some people's estimation. So most of these communities, you know, these days tend to be online, and they are gaining significant momentum. And more so, this is ever since the pandemic started hitting us. But you started making money out of Sales Hacker as an event company, and your company was one of those first virtual event organizations. And this was done much before the pandemic, or much before a lot of people started going online. So what triggered you to, you know, move away from in-person events and then, you know, go completely virtual? What was the motivation for you behind that?
That's a great question. I mean, maybe you did your research on some of my other podcasts or something like that, but this is actually one of my favorite questions that I get asked, because we did the acquisition in 2018. In 2017, we started to go virtual and do most of our programs as digital. So we were getting out of in-person conferences, and people asked me about, like, how did you see the writing on the wall, or like, how were you like ahead of your time on that? And again, coming back to the, you know, lucky or good situation, I don't know if I was lucky or if I was good. I think I made the right call. I think we like listened to our intuition and like what we were seeing. You know, nobody could have predicted the COVID thing. So that makes me look better than I am. You know, that in some cases, you could say that was, you know, luck making me look better, although we are not lucky at all that this is happening, but it's just funny like that. So anyway, back to the question. We were doing in-person events. We were making money off of in-person events, and the funding that was happening in the sales software space was great for the fact that we were getting a lot of sponsorships. But when I started Sales Hacker, the only companies who did customer conferences were really big companies because it was expensive to do a customer conference. When I was in year 3 or 4 of running Sales Hacker and the funding wave was catching up, companies were raising so much money so much earlier that you were able to do a customer conference earlier in your company history. So now all of a sudden, instead of just going up against companies like, you know, Dreamforce for a sales conference, we went to going up against, I don't know, potentially 4 or 5 companies doing a sales conference per quarter. And that makes it really saturated. It gets really hard for us. We had to run our conference for profit. A bunch of these venture-backed companies didn't have to make a profit off their conference. So our differentiators for our conference, you know, there was only so much you can do. We couldn't like get crazy keynote speakers. Actually, the other ones could because they could spend the money. We couldn't have any like crazy food or like after-party acts or anything like that. Actually, the other ones could because they could spend the money. So at a certain point, you're looking at this thing and you're like, wow, we're running out of like key differentiators here. And it's really just the speaker lineup. But in a lot of ways, these companies are getting bigger, so much so to the point that like they could probably get the same speakers from these companies. So our walls are closing in. What are we going to do? And nobody was really doing a good job at virtual at the time. So we're like, all right, we could do these webinars. Like these seem to be working. People are paying for it. So yeah, we pivoted the business to completely virtual business. And it ended up working out for us. It ended up paying off, and it was a lot less of a headache. But we gave the people what they wanted in the beginning of our business, which was the conferences, and then over time, it, you know, that changed, and we had to pivot with it. And I think a lot of companies kind of missed the boat on that sometimes, and unfortunately, we didn't.
Right. You know, you can always connect the dots only when you look backwards. That's interesting. You know, and right now, do you think we are at a point where we are witnessing a saturation of events, you know, especially in the SaaS space?
Yeah, totally saturated. I mean, even communities, everything is saturated these days. But, you know, the time will tell. People will select and self-select in and out. And, you know, we'll see where it nets out. There's nothing you can do about that saturation. You know, everybody's going to do their thing. They're going to do what they think is best for their company. And, you know, what you will end up getting is, so a bunch of these companies did their own customer conferences, realized it was a waste and that they couldn't raise as much money again, and then they stopped. But then there were still a bunch that were successful at it, so they kept going. So you went from like 2 companies that were doing their own customer conferences to 25 overnight, and then back down to like 10. So that's okay. Like, that works. And the same thing will happen with communities and all these other things that are happening right now. People will pick a place to live and you'll get what you get. And then that's where we'll net out.
That's beautiful. I mean, just to acknowledge what you said earlier about these heavy hitting companies spending so much money on events before the pandemic. I mean, I've worked for a couple of companies like that. And, you know, these companies will spend millions of dollars on events, user conferences, as well as, you know, internal events, and without the ROI being justified to them. So I don't know what are they going to spend on now since we are still in the lockdown. So happy for them.
Everything went from, you had 2 channels, in-person and virtual. And in-person got shut down. So now everybody's in the same channel for virtual. It's super noisy. So you got to figure out what's going to break through that noise. Everybody's trying to figure it out together.
Absolutely. Now, Max, you have an extensive experience growing a company from nothing to an entity that has clearly put a dent in the sales community around the world. And, you know, based on what you have done so far, I'm tempted to ask you, what is the number one advice or the formula for success you might have for others? But But I don't, you know, I don't think that's wise to do, and I won't do that because we all know that there isn't any silver bullet for being a world-class entrepreneur, right? And you yourself has pointed this out in other forums too. So I want to take a slightly different route and ask you, what is an unpopular opinion you think most people in sales need to hear today?
Oh man, be patient. That's probably the most unpopular thing to say per salesperson. Everybody wants to, you know, come in, be an SDR for 6 months, get promoted to AE, you know, immediately, and go out there, get enterprise accounts, crush quota, make $1 million a year, W-2. And that's just not how it works. You know, you're probably going to be an SDR for a year or two. Trying to fast track that a lot of times backfires because, you know, you end up switching jobs. And that means you have to ramp, and ramp is 3 to 6 months, and you switch jobs to the one that's going to take you to be an AE when you should have been still an SDR. And so, like, it's probably not a tier one job, and then et cetera, et cetera. So, like, if you can get in as an SDR at a higher tier company, work your way up at that company. Don't go a higher tier company to a lower tier company just to be an AE faster. Then you're an AE and you're, you know, doing, you know, SMB and mid-market deals, and you want to do enterprise, and like, I'm on a call the other day with somebody that's doing an enterprise deal, and they're like, yeah, it took them 3 weeks to get us the NDA. And I'm like, yeah, I mean, like, all these people say they want to be enterprise reps, and then they get into a deal cycle, and it, you know, it takes you 3 weeks to get an NDA back from, you know, a massive corporation. Like, those things are slow, painfully slow, and a lot of different stakeholders, and there's a lot of learnings that you need to gather in your career to be able to execute those deals. And to keep it together. And you can't just like rush into that. And you got to work for the right boss. You got to work for the right CEO. You got to work for the right company. There are so many things to nail, I think, to have an exceptional career that, you know, I like to say your 20s are for learning, your 30s are for earning. If you spend that time early in your career building those foundational pillars and building blocks, I think long term, you're going to be so much more successful than if you know, tried to rush and just get there fast. And so I like to say, be patient. It's unpopular.
Well, that's a very beautiful message. And yeah, of course, it's not a message that everybody likes to listen, but that's the fact. So I absolutely love that. And now that we are inching towards the 40-minute mark, so the next thing that we have in store for us is the rapid fire round. So are you up for it?
Let's do it.
All right. So the format is that I'll, you know, ask you some crisp questions, and the answers need not be short. You can, you know, go for it in the way you want to answer it. So here's question number one, and I'm going to pick this up based on what you just said. So if the 20s are for learning and the 30s are for earning, what do you think are the 40s and 50s for?
Oh, man. maybe nailing it. I mean, you know, if you spend the right time early in your career, doing those learnings, then, you know, your 20s are for learning, your 30s are for earning, your 40s and 50s are for taking earning to the next level, you know, really, really, really crushing it. That's what I think.
Right. That makes a lot of sense. And here's question number two. Again, I'm going to pick this up from our conversation. So what, according to you, is the most important thing in entrepreneurship? Is it luck, or is it hard work, or is it a combination?
Oh, it's a combination. You can't really get one without the other, I don't think. I think like working hard leads to opportunities, and then like taking opportunities and doubling down, which means you now have to work even harder, increases the surface area for luck to attach. And that's like, you know, serendipity. So you kind of have to do one to get the other. I mean, I think you have to work hard in order to get lucky. I think you can get lucky if you don't work hard, but it's very hard to. There's very little surface area for the luck to attach to find you. I mean, even buying a lottery ticket means that you need to go actually get out of bed and go buy the lottery ticket in order to get lucky. It's not zero effort. So whatever you can do to increase the surface area for luck to attach, for serendipity to happen or whatever, that's how you make it. That's how you get lucky. And so, you know, I'd take, you know, if you're trying to score a goal, right? You want to take 100 shots on goal. You're not like not one, and you want to try and get as close to the goal as possible, and you want to get a good angle, and you want to practice your shot. You know, you don't want to stand, you know, across the other side of the field, you know, never having shot a, you know, kicked it, let's say called soccer, like having never having kicked the ball before, right? Mm-hmm. So anyway,
Right. Love that. You know, you need to do a set of things to build your own luck. Love that answer. Yeah. All right. So here's question number three. What's the first adjective or probably a word or phrase that comes to your head the moment somebody mentions marketing qualified leads?
Oh, man. Taboo topic is probably the first thing that comes to my head. Is like it's probably the most like highly debated topic between sales and marketing. And marketing at the end of the day just really needs to be focused on driving revenue and pipeline and not focused on, you know, MQL numbers and things like that. And I think that's becoming more of a common theme across the board, is at least what we're seeing.
All right. So here's question number four. So if somebody were to ask you for a tip, you know, as a sales and marketing person for coming up with good cold emails, what would you tell them?
Tip for coming up with good cold emails. I mean, my first instinct would be to say get outreach so you can A/B test them. But now I feel like I'm
nice.
You know, it wouldn't be me if I wasn't selling. But yeah, I mean, there's no silver bullets in sales. It's really all about trial and error and experimentation and insights from that experimentation that'll guide you to do, you know, to make the right tweaks or edits so that you could do better the next time. So, you know, you can sit here and say, the more the email is personalized, the better outcome you'll have. It's like, well, that's not necessarily true because there are a million other variables. Just because I found that to be true in my business doesn't mean you'll find that to be true in your business. Second problem with that is like, well, what does that mean? Does that mean that I, you know, have to delete more words, add more words? What does that, you know, what does that look like? It's really tough to provide silver bullets or pieces of advice like that. It's much easier to say, do some research. If you're starting from scratch, do some research on what a good cold email looks like. Go do that and then test it against other variables. And then eventually you'll figure out, okay, well, this is the best performing subject line. This is the best performing copy. And you'll be able to test that over time, ongoing, never done.
That's beautiful. So the question number five is interesting. I mean, I'm looking forward to this because I'm going to ask you to give a big shout out to anyone that you want. It could be a person, it could be a team member, it could be an author, if it is that person that you've not been able to appreciate in public, even better. Who would that be?
Ooh, I don't know. That's so tough. I have so many. My gut, my instinct, my right off the bat says to give a shout out. I'm going to give a shout out to Harmony Hickman, Kelly Justice, who run Demand Gen for Outreach, and are like two of my favorite people, and they do such a great job. And they, in a lot of the questions you asked, come to mind as people who have, you know, been through the journey with me as, you know, running marketing at Outreach. And they are two demand gen people that really, you know, seem to understand sales, not just, you know, how it works and how the funnel works, but, you know, the plight of the salesperson. So those are my shout outs.
Absolutely. We would, we would be more than happy to give them a shout out in our show notes as well. Thank you for doing that. And here's the last question. Like, you've studied or traveled to so many places. You've studied in the abroad. So which place would you say taught you the most in terms of entrepreneurship or sales?
Man, that would be really, really tough to answer. I'm not sure there's any like one place specific.
Yeah, you could add a few if you want.
Well, I mean, I used to love going to the Middle East and India and Africa and even parts of Asia where they have markets, and like walk through the markets and see how the people sold to you and how like active they were and aggressive they were and what are the things that they said and the mannerisms and the psychology that went into selling. And, you know, you got to see some people who like, I mean, here we all go back to our homes and with Wi-Fi and whatever else, but like there in a lot of cases, you know, I remember being like, oh wow, this is like everybody's livelihood. Like they had to sell the stuff that they were selling. They might not be able to put food on the table that night. And I remember this one that I went to, I think it was in Egypt somewhere, and the guy had very broken English. And he's like, hey, my friend. I'm like, you know, what's going on? He's like, what's your name? And I said, oh, my name is Max. And he's like, oh, Max, that's my uncle's name. I looked at the guy and I was like, there's a very low chance that your uncle's name is Max. Like, the area of the world that we're in, people aren't named Max, first of all. Second of all, like, yeah, no chance that your uncle's name is Max. But it was a, you know, it was a tactic to befriend me, to get me to trust, to say like, oh, if, you know, he's got an uncle named Max, like, oh, he can't be a bad guy or anything like that. And so you kind of like, you kind of start to understand, you know, some of the things that people say or do, or like tactics that work, or psychological behaviors that transcend, you know, the workforce, so to speak. And I thought that was really interesting. And there are a lot more, you know, examples. I'm sure if I had time, I could put pen to paper on.
Sounds like that guy was trying to personalize the cold selling to you.
Exactly. He was, you know, dynamic fields. You just plug in name here and it's his uncle's name or it's his cousin's name or something like that. But I get what he was trying to do. I don't think it was used the right way. And, you know, I'm all for authentic selling, but it was interesting early in my, I don't know, life, career, whatever. I think I was over there while I was still in college. And just to put two and two together, like, oh, interesting. Like, that's an interesting.
Just a quick follow-up question to one of the answers that you gave earlier about the cold email thing. Didn't you guys just launch a new website called Cold Email Grader? Can you talk a little bit about that?
Yeah, it's actually a little pet project of mine that I worked on while I was out on paternity leave. But we launched a little product called coldemailgrader.com. It's free, and you can go there and test out your cold emails. So that would have been a great thing for me to plug earlier. Thanks for bringing it up. But you can go there and plug in your cold emails, and we'll give you some feedback on deliverability and an overall score of the email out of 100. And it'll rate the body, the subject line, mechanics, spelling, grammar, all that kind of stuff, and give you some feedback on how to get it up to 100. So I've seen a great response to that so far. It's definitely a fun thing.
That's really nice. That's really nice. This was a great round of fireside chat, Max, and we enjoyed every bit of our conversation with you. And we usually end our podcast by asking our podcast guests, what's a parting message that you want to leave our audience with? But in your case, since you are a hacker at heart, I want to ask you, what's a great sales hack or a life hack that you can share with our audience today?
Sales hack or a life hack? Oh man, putting me on the spot. I mean, one of the ones that's done right by me for a while now is just drinking enough water. It's so underrated. It's my life hack. Simple, straightforward, but you know, I'm not a good water drinker. Like I'll forget. So I've been, I bought a pitcher and I'll slice up some fruit in the morning. And then, over the course of the day, I'll fill up the pitcher with water and put some fruit in it and then make myself what I call a little spa water and have that, you know, while I work. And so now I'm drinking a couple pitchers of water every day and I can feel the energy. I can feel a lot better. My skin's better. Everything's better. And it was kind of simple to add that like motivation versus before when I would just, it'd be like 4 p.m. I'd be like, holy shit, I haven't eaten or drank anything at all. And I'm still going. So that's it. Yeah, that's about.
Yeah, that's a great fitness hack, health hack, and a life hack. I second that because I have, you know, developed the habit of drinking almost a bottle of water soon after I get up, and it gets you going from the morning. And I think it's a life changer once you get into the habit of it. Totally agree. And you probably have already guessed what our last question is going to be for tonight, which is obviously the call to action for finding you in the wild, wild world of the internet. Where do you hang out online, Max? Where should listeners of our show find you in case they have follow-up questions?
LinkedIn is probably the best place to find me, follow me. In the sales hacker community, and come check out Sales Hacker, come check out Outreach.
Yeah, and maybe you should revive that you know, website once again. It's really catchy. Max Talks Hacks.
Max Talks Hacks. Yeah, I'll get it up and running again. I got to do that.
Thank you, Max. It was an honor having you in the show today. All the best for everything that's coming your way in 2020 and 2021. And to the people listening to us right now, we will catch you with yet another episode next week. Until then, this is bye from me, Manish.
And this is bye from me, Yag. Take care.
Thanks for listening to the ABM Conversations Podcast. Make sure you subscribe and share your comments with us. We're constantly looking for your feedback, thoughts, and suggestions to make the show more relevant to you.